League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Come enjoy the high tides and good vibes. We're at Drift Bar in the Heights, 1207 West 20th. We'll be here until 3. Wheelhouse following us, 3 to 7. They'll be open all night. But while we're on the air, 97.5 Beer Bucket Special, 5 domestic beers for $20 during the broadcast. This is your place to watch sports. I mean, there's TVs galore everywhere. They have the two biggest screens in the Heights, including a 250-inch screen on the south patio. All the U of H games are on here. The drink specials, outstanding, and happy hour until 8. This is a great spot to watch.
You want to watch the games on Sunday, and you want a great place to do it, this would be the spot for you. Because especially if the sun is shining and the weather's nice and the inside, outside, and like I said, how clean and new this place is with all the different screens. And from what I'm told, the nightlife is above average, to say the least. So there would be a lot of entertainment for you here. I recommend it highly.
Also, anyone can come by Drift Bar while we're here. We'll be here until 7. Our street team is out here as well, handing out some giveaways. Also, you can pick up some free tickets to Grubathon. Grubathon is a food truck and food eating competition. Doesn't get better than that. It's in BK. The Woodlands on Saturday, February 5th. He'd be the betting favorite. If you like food and fun, this is the event for you. All proceeds benefit Hope Haven. They help homeless find a path off the streets and mentor them to succeed in life. Hope Haven has helped 600 individuals into stable living in the last 6 years. You can learn more at Grubathon.
Rumor is BK has a hollow left leg, which allows him to consume as much food as he does.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, so that he might be able to get out there and do some damage. Michael's already here, one of our loyals, having sampled the food here and checking out everything in the Heights. He's trying to big time us right now, and he's looking the other way, but you know, we're looking at him and appreciating the support.
Let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, on a Frankie's Friday Fire, giving away $50 to Frankie's Italian Kitchen for whoever brings the heat. We've got some leaders in the clubhouse already. Mm-hmm. But let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the high with the Killer Bees.
Hey, guys, just wanted to comment on Caserio and this Deshaun Watson trade. I'm very, very much in the skeptical camp on Caserio. Feel like he's done more things that are questionable than things that, you know, he should be celebrated for. And at some point, he's going to have to take a deal. I feel like that point was at the trade deadline last year. I don't think Deshaun's trade value is going to rise any. I don't feel like there's going to be any criminal convictions. But at some point, we need to take a deal. We need to move on and get draft capital. The other point, you guys mentioned Tony Busby. Just want to say I have no idea what happened with Deshaun and those ladies, whatever happened. Going to jail. I'm not defending him, but Busby is an ambulance chasing POS. I mean, that's just so obvious. So the fact that he leaked depositions, that shouldn't be a surprise. This is who he is. He tried to do the same thing with the Travis Scott people. He's probably a pretty bad person for what I know of him. And I actually think that it helps Deshaun Watson a lot that he has Busby on the other side and so many people dislike him.
Gary, appreciate the call. Here's the thing, if we go just in the order of your points, but when you look at what you said, the last thing you want to do is make a deal too soon and then have buyer's remorse and look at the fact that, you know, much to your chagrin, all the cases were solved. The league was very, very light on a suspension. Deshaun gets back to playing football, and he plays at a high level, and everybody looks and goes, you should have waited. Now, on the flip side, you don't want to wait too long, but you really can't. You're in an influx position of waiting until you get some kind of clarity about the legalities, right? That's what we're all waiting on. It's not whether he can play football or not, although taking a year off also has an adverse effect on a lot of football players. So there's more in the air than solidified, and for that reason alone, he's your number one asset. He is the one guy on your roster right now that can either speed up your rebuild or can completely delay it and slow it down even more, based on what you get in return. And I think it's too big of a risk to say that last year, when nothing was solved, that you were going to make a deal for the sake of making a deal just to get him off your roster. At that point, you might as well trade him for the Oilers colors and logo and everything else and cut your losses. Because other than that, it wasn't the right time to do it back then, and it's not the right time to do it right now. You need to get your people in the know in terms of, where are we? Is it quiet because they are progressing? Is it because Tony Busby is an a-hole and he wants to make this about him and he's going to draw it out as long as possible? But that will give you more clarity and a quicker timeline in terms of when we have to do something.
There's a reason all lawyers are called that, and most of the lawyers I know, I think, would be in that same conversation. All I know is about Harden versus Busby. That's a heavyweight matchup. I mean, that's just two very good dudes and what they do, going toe to toe at their professions.
Very nice. If these lawyers that you know are friends of yours, and you're going to put them in the same category.
It was a little inside joke. Oh. A little inside joke there. Now, it's fair to be skeptical with Caserio because, look, he hired David Culley. In sports, for me, like, I'm a high risk, high reward type of guy. Like, you're not going to be safe and win big in sports, whether that's the coaching hire, whether that's trading Deshaun Watson. I wouldn't have taken the safe route at the November 2nd trade deadline. I'll roll the dice. If that means that it costs me in the long run, I'm willing to do that. If it means I get the three first-round draft picks in the offseason, that's the reason that you hold on to them.
The return on investment's too great if it does work out in your favor, right? The difference between two, three, four, or five first-round picks or other assets is so huge in the NFL, you can't afford not to wait it out at least a little bit longer.
713-780-3776. Speaking of getting rid of...
Was there a second part of that question? Did we miss it, or did we get all of it?
It was about Busby and about when do you trade Watson. I mean, it's a fair point by Gary. I think it's fair to be skeptical, of course, of Nick Caserio. Speaking of players sticking around Houston, let's dive into this NBA trade deadline coming up February 10th. Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle said, with a young roster and two first-round draft choices in 2022 on the way, the Rockets are now more interested in acquiring picks for future years, per Fagan of the Chronicle. I think that's sound strategy. Like, you don't want to have 20 young players on your roster. That makes it very difficult to navigate. I like that the flexibility it gives you if you have the draft picks in the future, 23, 24, 25, whatever the case may be. But speaking of the players, what is the percentage chance, I mean 0% to 100%, that Christian Wood is traded? There's been rumors with Miami. Duncan Robinson has been mentioned. I like Duncan Robinson as a piece. I don't like him as the centerpiece of a Christian Wood trade. What are the percentage chances Christian Wood is gone?
So here's what I'll say about that, and I'll start by just answering that real quick. I'd say it's 50-50 at this point, and that's more about the Rockets than it is about other teams. And I've said my piece in terms of why they need to do something now and before the trade deadline, while you are in a position of strength and you can get the most for him, as opposed to after the deadline and into next year when his contract's up at the end of the year and no one's going to give you top dollar because you don't know if you can re-sign him. But I think that the reason why that when Fagan is reporting what he's reporting, that's being said, is because this is the last year they control their own pick. And then for the foreseeable future, the majority of their high picks based on their record are going to be controlled by Oklahoma City, whether it be swaps or they actually get your pick. So what you want to do now is you want to kind of double down going backwards. You want to go, okay, I got my pick this year. Now I'm looking for picks in the following year and then 2 years from there, because I've got to try and get back some of those picks that I gave up, or Daryl Morey gave up when he was clearing the cupboard to try and win immediately. That's what you're trying to do now if you're Rafael Stone and the rest of the Rockets brass, because that's where you really have to worry. Because if this team isn't getting increasingly better and you're not controlling your own pick, it's setting back your rebuild as well.
I have it 70% chance he's gone, 30% chance he's still here. Now, Eric Gordon.
I would put 70% on Gordon, 75%.
Gone. See, you have Eric Gordon's more likely to be traded than Christian Wood.
More value.
I have it the other way around.
More value.
I've seen people advocating for Gordon, like, keep him. Like, what you can get for him now is going to be the same for what you can get for him in the offseason, so you might as well keep him. What do you think of that school of thought?
Here's the thing, and I'm just going to make sure it's very clear for you guys. As much as they would love to unload Christian Wood, and quietly as much as publicly, Christian Wood wants out. He wants to be the man. He wants the attention. He wants a plan of getting the ball more. He wants to be a max player. He wants out. But here's the one that not many people realize. Eric Gordon is also not Christian Wood. He's going to be a good team player. He's going to do what's required of him and more, because he's a member of the franchise and he appreciates getting paid. He wants out more than Wood. And he doesn't want to be a part of a rebuild. And he wants to be a part of a winner. But he's going to go about it the right way. That's why I think more so than anything else, he will find a home first. Because teams know, I don't have to worry about the off the court like I have to worry about with Wood. I'm getting a professional both on and off the floor. I'm getting a veteran that can shoot, that can defend and play multiple positions.
Yeah.
And not every single night, but when you need him, he can give you 25. He can give you a big game here and there too. I think there's too many teams that are playoff teams that need shooting and what he brings to the table, and he doesn't have the kind of off-the-court stuff that Wood has. That's why I put the percentages higher for Gordon.
See, for those same reasons why I have it higher for Wood. Like, it'd be easier to hang on for a Gordon who has all the characteristics you mentioned as opposed to Christian Wood. Now, what about John Wall?
So, from a John Wall perspective, they'd love to unload him. John Wall he's steadfast at saying he thinks he's going to get a buyout. And the Rockets are not offering a buyout because they're already paying him to do absolutely nothing. You know, why would they allow him even more flexibility?
And Wall doesn't really want to budge much on it either.
No, that's what I'm saying. He doesn't want to at all. If he did, Tillman, much like the Daryl Morey situation, might just cut his losses and say, give me, you know, $10, $12 million back or whatever it is, and I'd be happy to get out from under you because you're killing me just watching you every day not putting on a uniform. But I think that the Lakers have kicked around when the Russ situation was as bad as it was a week ago, and I think, unfortunately for the Rockets, it's gotten better, though they're not winning, that the Russ situation was on the table of Russell Westbrook, THT, and maybe a pick just to get John Wall because no matter what they get back has the chance of being better than what Russ was doing for the Lakers, and then that kind of fell apart. Clippers want him, but the Clippers only want him if he's bought out. They don't want to give up any assets, so that's out. So I think it's more from a Wall perspective going to be, are there any teams willing to make the commitment and take the flyer to go and get John Wall in a trade? Because if not, just get used to him being an honorary part-time assistant coach and distraction.
Mine's 1%. He's not waiving the buyout.
Oh, yeah,
Clippers
agree.
And Heat have been mentioned as teams that'd be interested, but only in the buyout market.
Jeremy, explain to me from the Heat perspective how they get better. They have Kyle Lowry.
Well,
if Kyle Lowry's
reserve.
Your point guard, what a $40-some million reserve that already is paying Jimmy Butler and Bam and Kyle?
No. That's why only in the buyout market. They're not going to be interested in absorbing his salary.
Because I had never heard buyout. I just heard Miami was interested in trading for him, and that's
no
when
chance.
I always said, there's no way they're doing that.
No chance. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back, I have a Nick Caserio theory that, if true, will make the anti-Patriot South crowd very happy. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Right now, I'm going to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I was there this morning, bright and early, and they were taking care of people left and right because they know what they're doing, and a lot of people have heard me speak about Apollo, and they've taken the recommendation, and now they're reaping the benefits. They have more energy. They feel better. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you have problems, they have solutions. They're going to put you on a program that works. They take care of me on a regular basis. I've lost another 3.5 pounds. I'm checking on a weekly basis in terms of my blood pressure, my cholesterol levels, my body fat percentages, all the things you can chart with a full body composition analysis. You want more energy in your life? You can go for all the different ways they do hormone therapy for men and women, and that's a multitude of ways where you can do it at yourself at home and administer it there. You can come in weekly. You can do, if you're a guy, cutting-edge pellet testosterone therapy where you only have to go in every 6 months, but you still reap all the energy benefits. And if you want to take it to a lesser degree, get a B12 shot every week, and that'll give you some more energy, but it doesn't go all through all the details like you have to do well before you get into the testosterone. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. The bottom line is they have experts that know what they're doing that are going to take care of you. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. Tell them how you want help. They're going to put you on a program that works. They're going to get your results. Go to ApolloMH.com. Book your first appointment. You're going to find out most major insurance has accepted discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank. Get that free B12 shot on your first visit. And then tell them that you just want to get results and find that energy and take care of yourself. They're going to take care of you every step of the way. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What if I told you the Texans are not Patriot South? Like Cal McNair told you at the introductory press conference with Nick Caserio, we are not Patriot South. Do you realize that Nick Caserio has interviewed 15 different candidates in the last 13 months, Joel? You know how many of those guys have been Patriot assistants? Zero. He has not interviewed one single Patriot assistant in 13 months. He's interviewed 15 different candidates in 13 months. Zero of them
are people
Patriot
in this
assistants.
Establishment
Zero.
Thanking
Patriot
their
assistants.
Lucky stars, praying that it continues. Happy as hell that stat just came out. But, Jeremy, it doesn't matter because you can say that, but you can't say they aren't connected to the Patriots. You can't say they don't have inroads to the Patriots'
How?
Way.
Well, who?
Well, I mean, you look at the fact that Brian Flores is a Patriots guy.
That's the only guy that's a Patriots guy. Was not a Patriots assistant, obviously. Got let go by
right.
the Dolphins. Brian Flores.
He was an assistant. He was a linebackers coach before he got the Dolphins.
Not currently an assistant.
Okay.
Brian Flores, Jonathan Gannon, Joe Lombardi, Josh McCown, Hines Worth, Eric Bieniemy last year, Joe Brady, Jim Caldwell, David Culley, Matt Eberflus, Leslie Frazier, Tim Kelly, Marvin Lewis, Josh McCown again, Brandon Staley. Zero of those 15 guys were assistants for the Patriots whenever they were interviewed by Nick Caserio. I have a theory, and I could be way off base here. I could be an idiot. People think that all of the time. I feel like there was an agreement between Bill Belichick and Nick Caserio, and Nick Caserio left. Keep in mind that Nick Caserio was told by the Patriots that he could not interview with the Houston Texans job, not once but twice. There was the once that was
fine for
the infamous party when the Patriots are getting their rings and Easterby was courting Nick Caserio when he wasn't allowed to, and then Robert Kraft went towards the Texans and Bob McNair at the time issued an apology. We know that one. But the offseason before that, they wanted to interview him when they hired Brian Gain, and the Patriots said, "Uh-uh, you're not talking to our guy. You're not talking to Nick Caserio." So my theory here is this. And 713-780-ESPN, if you want to tell me I'm an idiot, here, 713-780-3776. I feel like there was an agreement with Nick Caserio and Bill Belichick that he was not going to take a Bill Belichick assistant, maybe for 1 year, maybe for 2 years, maybe for 5 years, maybe forever.
It's not unheard of, and I've lived it, and I know it. Daryl Morey puts into his deals. Think about all we talk about coaches' trees. What about general managers' trees? What about Gerson Rosas? What about Monty McNair? What about now a guy like Sachin that was with us that is now with the Minnesota Timberwolves that when Gerson was like, he's taking care of things over there. What about all these different disciples of Daryl? You think that Daryl just said, yeah, when you get there, this goes as deep as like equipment managers and trainers and all these different guys. Daryl makes sure that he's not going to stunt your growth. And this is crazy because as assistant coaches, he stunts the growth of assistants. He actually makes his contracts so that assistants can't get out of their deals in time to get other jobs, so they're forced to stay with the Rockets. But at least with his staff, he's been able to say, hey, you can go take that gig, but you can't take any of my guys for this amount of time. And sometimes it differs, sometimes it varies, and based on the guy's contracts. It gets worked in there, but it's absolutely not out of the realm of possibilities that Belichick said, I don't want to hold you back. You can go to Houston. You can take the gig, but you can't take any of my guys. From this level, say you have this window of opportunity, like a year or two. From like below that level, like positional coaches and otherwise, maybe it's only a year or so. But I don't think there's any question with the amount of detail that front offices put into every aspect of what they do on a daily basis and how important guys they trust are within their staffs, that might have been discussed.
John Metterperil, who is actually the Boston College football radio guy, but he also does weekend shows on WEEI, which is the flagship
station,
of the New England Patriots. He tweeted this on January 13th, which at the time I was like, okay, this doesn't really mean a whole lot. But he said, a well-placed source told me months ago Gerard Mayo would be high on Nick Caserio's list if and when he fired David Culley. Source also told me that Caserio had an agreement with Belichick that he wouldn't hire any Pats coaches for a year. Now, maybe the timeline here is wrong, because what's the one question you hear a lot whenever you talk about this coaching search? Why hasn't he put in an interview request for Josh McDaniels? Everybody thought he'd be a Patriot guy. Everybody thought he'd want to go to the well that he had in New England and bring in a Josh McDaniels, at least for an interview, right? Maybe if you don't even hire the guy, as an interview. Gerard Mayo was a theory that I had, somebody that he knew from the past that he had a working relationship with and had high respect for, that he would be interested in bringing him into the Texans. And again, maybe not to hire him, but at least for an interview. You brought this question up all the time. Why isn't McDaniels hired or interviewed? Why hasn't Mayo interviewed? What other explanation is there than there was a handshake deal between Caserio and Belichick saying, don't take my dudes?
Here's another explanation, though. That you know what? I'm not saying it's solid gold, but I'm saying it's something to consider when you ask the question, and it really came up to me when you did. That is just like we're just hearing now that there's been interviews conducted that we didn't know about. Maybe, just maybe, as they decipher who their guy is, they're not following all the rules to a T. shocker if you're a Patriots guy, but also that they might be just doing what they feel like doing and then reporting it later, talking to whoever they need to talk about, and trying to establish their own pecking order, regardless if it's publicized and the media and the fan base know about it or not. I think the other thing that you have to consider is they might not have been a Patriot assistant. They might have been in the Patriots tree per se, but in the case of a guy like McCown, he's got a pre-existing relationship with Jack for sure, and you know the organization has liked him in the past. And maybe that's all you need. You don't have to be the official on your business card Patriot logo guy. You just have to be a guy that has the inroads with communication and a relationship to one, if not both, of Jack and Nick. And it's interesting because I apologize for being late to the Twitch, but our own Jake Asman is on the Twitch. He's saying that right now the reports are out there with Mike Garofalo and others that McCown's interviewing for the second time. That McCown is the first known finalist. So that's, you know what? As much as we talked about positives.
Whoa, first known finalist. Like,
that's what Jake put in the Twitch. But I'm just saying, it's the first guy that's getting the second interview.
Jonathan Gannon got a second interview.
Okay, well then there's two. But regardless, this kind of takes me a step back again. For O'Connell and some of the, for a guy like O'Connell, I'm fired up. I'm excited because he's out of the Patriots' way. He's a different way of thinking offensively. He's a guy that truly is ready to take the next step, but has gotten enough experience doing what he's doing previously under Sean McVay. You get back to this McCown discussion, and I know it's what really fires up you and I going back and forth. But to me, I am the most stay away from Josh McCown in a position of that much power and control. Get him on the coaching staff. Get him experience. Get him in your building on a daily basis, in meetings and otherwise, so you can analyze how much he truly knows and what he can do at various levels. I don't like the fact that they like him so much that they're ready to put him on the speed fast-forward course of throwing him right into the head coaching job without having any kind of substantial experience that means something.
I said earlier that if something happened with McCown today, he could be the fifth head coach of the Houston Texans. The more this moves on to the weekend until next week is kind of where I changed the mindset there. Tom Pelissero's tweet, he did say those words. Former NFL quarterback Josh McCown is in Houston today for a second interview with the Texans about their head coaching job. Sources tell Tom Pelissero and Mike Garofalo. McCown has told the team he's all in. Now, he's the first known finalist. Now, that's some opinion there because Jonathan Gannon did get two interviews, but he is in Houston. Maybe he's listening to the Killer Bees. If you want to plead your case on why you should be the next head coach of the Houston Texans, 713-780-ESPN. But Houston, what are your thoughts? Josh McCown, not only his second interview, but second interview this coaching cycle, his third in the last 13 months. What's your fear factor of this? 713-780-ESPN. We'll dive into it when we return. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Drift Bar. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live at Drift Bar in the Heights. Swing on by, 1207 West 20th Street. We'll be here till 3, Wheelhouse 3 to 7. They'll be open far longer than that. They have high tides, good vibes, happy hour until 8 o'clock. And while we're broadcasting, us and the Wheelhouse, 97.5 Beer Bucket Special, 5 domestic beers for $20 during the broadcast. If you're looking for a place to hang out, have a good drink, enjoy the scenery, enjoy the televisions, they have the two biggest TV screens in the Heights. This is a perfect spot. Come check it out if you haven't been here before. Either to say hello to us or to say hello to the Wheelhouse, or even if you want to hang out after that as well. Their happy hour goes until 8 o'clock. It is also a Frankie's Friday fire, and I think there's going to be a lot of fire in this city now. $50 to whoever brings the fire from Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Josh McCown is the second candidate this cycle to get a second interview by the Houston Texans. Jonathan Gannon was the first one. His second interview probably came early last week, or early this week, late last week. But Josh McCown, who has now interviewed for the Houston Texans job three times in the last 13 months. Remember, he had the interview last year. There were some rumors that Josh McCown could have been the guy if he was ready to take the leap. Decided he wanted to take a year away from football after a long 18-year NFL career. Apparently, if you believe the general, he turned down the associate head coach offer from the Houston Texans, saying he wanted to take the year. There was a lot of thoughts from Mike Florio, from John McClain, that David Culley was a bridge until Josh McCown was ready to take over, and now he is in our great city interviewing for the second time this cycle and the third time in the last 13 months.
Here's the thing. It's more negatives than positives, and this is what normally causes the back and forth between you and I. And when we get into this and I look at it from the perspective of, look, maybe he is somebody that is the up-and-coming guy. Maybe he has a skill set that we don't know completely all about, but we believe that he's a guy that, you know, when given an opportunity to make some mistakes, learn with some on-the-job training, that he could be the guy long-term for the Houston Texans. You hope that's the case. But you look at it from overall, all these different perspectives in which the negatives start coming by. He didn't do what he was offered a chance to do last year. He's never coached on an NFL level to be a position coach or above. So you don't know, as much as you believe he has the skills to do it, you don't know where he's actually done it unless you see what he's done coaching high school football and you value that more than most, how that would translate to the NFL. You look at it from a Casario perspective. This is the one that I keep gnawing on, going, how could Nick let this happen? Because this would be a Jack Easterby guy. This would be Jack's guy who Nick himself went out and said, Jack's not involved in anything we're doing in a football perspective from football operations. And he was very clear in making sure he made his point publicly a week ago. Now, everyone you talk to says, if McCown's the guy, it's all because of Jack. Jack is completely opposite of what Nick said. Jack is heavily involved, and he would get more credit and also attention for bringing in McCown than anything with Nick. If Nick is so adamant about picking assistants and doing it his way and having his vision and his culture, and yet Jack is not only meddling, Jack is doing things you're supposed to do, that's a massive negative in terms of the perception across the league.
I can live with Josh McCown. We know this. If you listen to the Killer Bees, the one stain that does come into play here is that it would be a Jack Easterby decision, or at least have a heavy, you know, voice in the conversation to bring in a Josh McCown. They have a long history. The FCA is something that they were able to connect with and were able to build their relationship, and that's kind of how it all started. We know that he came over as a Houston Texan late two seasons ago to serve as a backup, and that was because Jack Easterby was kind of pulling the strings then. 3522 saying on the text line, 713-780-ESPN, by the way, 713-780-3776. Three interviews in less than 13 months for Josh. Wow, the Texans are embracing the suck for real, thanks to Joel. Here's another one as well from 6539. If Casario makes the McCown hire, he's essentially cutting his own throat. This guy isn't ready and will only leave the Texans as a dumpster fire team, period. We don't know how it's going to turn out. If Josh McCown is this brilliant football mind, and if you listen to people inside the football industry, they have faith in Josh McCown more than people that talk about the football industry. Also, like the part where it says if Casario makes the McCown hire, he's essentially cutting his own throat. This hire should cut his own throat no matter what. As a general manager, you should not get three coaching hires as the general manager of an organization. So this is your risk at all. This is standing on the table for a guy no matter who you're hiring. Even if it's Brian Flores, if the dude does not work who you hire for the second time, you should be fired if it doesn't work.
It cuts him off from a power perspective regardless if this is the guy. And this is exactly what you know. You must.
He'd have more power.
No, but it cuts him off because it's a Jack hire. How can anybody, when you look about respect, when we talk about in a locker room, how can anybody respect Cully when they actually know that the GM was the guy that was running things and not the head coach? It's the same thing with this. If you think that you're supposed to respect the GM and he's the guy that's picking the groceries and he's the guy that's serving the meal by picking the assistant coaches and the head coach.
Why does a player have to respect the GM, though? You have to respect the coach, not the GM.
In the locker room, respect and trust is a big thing.
Not for a GM.
It absolutely is if he's running the thing more than Cully.
No,
if he's running the show,
coach.
Why are you – can I have my time now?
No. I'm going to interrupt when I think it's a bad take.
Because here's the thing. You've talked about this with Cully, and it didn't work. And we've had guys on this show that have been players and coaches that have said, yeah, when you go in that locker room on a daily basis and you don't know who you're actually answering to and who you're playing for and what the deal is, it matters. And it affects the guys. And it affects the level that they want to play on a daily basis, a game-by-game basis, and, like, be here longer short-term.
Do you think the Texans didn't play hard?
I think there were a lot. Look, you know that Tunsil quit on him because he wanted to milk it because he knew they weren't going anywhere and he didn't want to play with the thumb, and so he didn't play when he was supposed to play. I think that Roby and Cunningham and guys like that milked it because the situation wasn't favorable for them and they wanted out anyway and they tried to manipulate it. And now you're going to bring in a guy. Look, and the question that I have is when we do this with other players and other scenarios, I do it with this hire. And you could say, hey, look, what's the ceiling? What's the floor? Is the floor David Cully for a McCown? Is the ceiling the next Sean McVay? I would think that's a pretty fair spectrum.
Yeah, I would too.
But I don't know where you're going to end up trying to find a home for him, because at the same time, as you're trying to do what's necessary for this franchise on the rebuild, which is add more valuable players to the roster, whether they're reserves, special teamers, or eventual starters or draft picks. You've got to get guys also along the way that fortify the roster, veterans that want to play here. There's no veteran coming here that's going to go, oh, he was my backup quarterback once, and I think that I can respect playing for that guy. And then I really don't know overall, like, who's running the show and who am I trying to impress? Who am I talking to? What's going on? And then you find out the GM's hiring the assistant coaches too, so my position coach might be hired by one guy, but I'm supposed to think this guy's running the show. It's a bad look for a franchise that's been a bad look for too many seasons already.
There's no doubt it's a bad look. I'm not going to deny that. Just because it's a bad look doesn't mean that it can't work, though. And look, respect is earned. And like, whenever you have a first-year dude that's going to come and be the head coach of your football team, you're going to have to earn the respect of the players, no matter where you're coming from. Like, is it easier for a Brian Flores to earn the respect of the locker room over a Josh McCown? Yeah, maybe. But you still have to earn the respect, even if you're Brian Flores. And if you listen to a bunch of people around the NFL and a lot of former GM. We listened to Mike Tannenbaum yesterday. We'll get into some comments here from Steve Smith, who is a very, you know, well-respected player that played for a long time in the NFL that speak glowingly about Josh McCown. So it will be more difficult to earn the respect if Josh McCown is the head coach. Yeah, I think that's a fair comment to make, but to say like it won't happen isn't a fair comment to make, because the guy has been known for 18 years that is a great leader.
Wait,
he's great in
happen?
Locker rooms.
Who said it won't happen?
I said most of our listeners and texters and Twitchers saying it's going
to
be a clown organization and that it's going to cut Nick Caserio's throat. That's what I was referring to.
Because the situation is a very real possibility.
Absolutely.
It will happen. But I think that it's obvious
what will happen?
That he could get the head coaching job.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very real that's a possibility because otherwise he wouldn't have come this far along in the process. You're not doing this for any kind of – you're not doing this for reaction. You're not doing this to try and build up steam for him. If he's getting a second interview and it's gotten to this point, that means that there's some real interest with this guy. And if you got people reporting he's a finalist – he is a legitimate candidate.
Obviously, I think it's almost a done deal, to be honest.
And we talked about the chances of it possibly being announced today before 5 o'clock because it could get some run over the weekend. That's the only reason why you start thinking those things, because this story breaking when it did sets up that they could do what they did with Cully. Remember, he wasn't on the list.
Thursday.
It was a late move.
Oh,
all of a sudden.
Fire.
Well, but I'm saying they brought him in, and before you knew it, he trumped all the other finalists that you supposedly had, and they didn't want to let him leave town, and they made the deal quickly, and they got their guy, who didn't turn out to be much more than a 12-month Band-Aid. Now you're looking at another guy that when he comes into the building, and you know what you guys see, but we don't know what we see. It's going to be perceived negatively. The fans don't like it. It's not a big name. It's not a guy that they can hang their hat with and go, I can ride with this dude. If you look at it from the perspective of, from a national perspective, you already swung and missed once on a guy that didn't have head coaching or coordinator experience. Now you take it a different level. You're only basing everything that you are supposed to like about this guy based on what he did as a player and what he showed while playing in relationships he had. Fans, media, people that are paid to critique it like we are going to go, oh, my God, like you can't find better, do better, and get better?
You're right. But Nick Caserio shouldn't worry about any of those things. He shouldn't be worried about the fans' opinion. He shouldn't be worrying about you and I opinion. He shouldn't be worried about the other media's opinion. The one sole focus he should have with this hire is to hire the best candidate for the job. And a lot of people automatically equate lack of experience, lack of resume as the dude that's going to do the best job for the next 5 to 7 years. What Josh McCown and what any of these other candidates, Brian Flores, Hines Ward, Jonathan Gannon, what they've done in the last 5 years to build their resume isn't going to forecast what the Houston Texans are going to be 5 years down the road. As far as it goes with Nick Caserio, like, wouldn't you agree that no matter who the hire is, this should be his last crack at
it? Oh, this is it.
This should be – no, but even if it's not McCown, like, even if it's Brian Flores, like, whoever
– yeah.
You should only get two head coach hires as a general manager. So to me, that shows how much – like, this to me is a brave move. It's a move of bravado.
He must feel so secure, by the way, in the money and the years that he got that he's not worried about his future jobs either, and the fact that he can feel comfortable riding off into the sunset if he fails miserably on both of these hires, knowing this is his last go-around with this franchise. And he may not get another one if he does this yet again and fails. He's got to succeed. That's why it just seems to be so
risky.
Doesn't
that speak well to McCown? But it is risky. There's no doubt it's risky.
Massive risk.
But to me, and it goes back to the Deshaun Watson conversation we had earlier. Like, you don't win by being safe. You know how you win is by making the risky hire and hitting. Now, for every risky hire that hits, there's three more that fell. But I'd rather roll the dice and go, high risk, high reward with the thought that you might hit. It might be successful. This outside the box thinking might actually be the home run hire. And for Nick Caserio, like this is like the thought that he's slitting his throat with this hire regardless of who it is.
Here's the other thing I don't like. We've already had so many black eyes with this franchise over the last 12 to 24 months, right? And now Casario's trying to actually mend some of those fences and reconstruct some of those bridges.
Not for long.
But yet what he's doing with this is he's setting them all afire again because he's going, you know what? Not only is this a risky hire, not only is this that's going to draw controversy and negativity, but on top of everything else, it's going to question my own credibility as the guy running the show, because if you talk to people in the know, this is a Jack decision more than it's a Nick decision.
That's
scary for him.
That is the stain. That is the fear, absolutely. And it's a fear that the city has. As far as, like, the safe hire, like, let's say it – I know that you're, like, on the Brian Flores idea, but let's say you get the results that Brian Flores had in Miami with the Texans. Is that much better? Like, if you're around 500, you're going 9-8, like, do you want that? Or do you want the dude
Jeremy,
who maybe has a 25% chance that's going to be a hit and a slam dunk?
He's not getting that, nor anybody getting that in year one.
No, in the short term,
you're not getting it anyway. The one thing I liked about Brian Flores, because I was convinced, and I think you were early on in the process, they were going to go the Patriots way. If they were going to do that, at least get the one guy that has a voice in the room that he would insist on being heard, that he would possibly push back on guys that otherwise are telling you, you're our puppet, we're pulling the strings, and the minute that you don't do what we say, we're cutting the strings and finding someone else that will. So at least my liking in Flores was the last 2 years, he really kept his locker room. He kept guys that wanted to fight for him when they got off to awful starts or looked like they were in doomsday situations.
They beat some bad teams this
Doesn't matter.
Season,
it's like the Texans the
matters.
Year they won 9 in a row when it was like, you know what, you want to criticize them? And Bill O'Brien's the first one to tell you. We played the games on the schedule.
But it's still, you can – I mean,
but
you
I'm
can
just saying,
you can
a lot of guys
two.
Like we talked about with Tunsil, a lot of players will quit when they know that they don't have a chance or quit when the going gets really tough. But instead, he was able to keep the Dolphins teams together enough to which they put together a run to get just this close to making the playoffs 2 years in a row. You're not going to win in the short term here. We know that. But at least I like Flores because he was a guy that wasn't going to take everything that he was being told to do. He wasn't going to be a puppet, and he was going to make sure that his opinion and his choices were going to be heard.
And that's why I never thought he'd be a candidate, because Nick Caserio is looking for dudes that are less than. He wants to be at the top of the chain, and maybe that's why it's Josh McCown.
But then why make this hire and look like you're not at the top of the chain?
It's a unified body. It's the triad of the Houston Texans. Houston, what do you think of the news? 713-780-ESPN. We're giving you some juice on a Frankie's Friday Fires. We're broadcasting live at the Drift Bar in the Heights. Swing on by. We know you want to leave work early on a Friday. Swing by here. Say hello to us. Say hello to the Wheelhouse. It will be here after us. More on Josh McCown when we come back. Steve Smith had some very kind words to say about Josh McCown. We'll see if that maybe changes your mind, even a little. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. Look, Doc Linville is dedicated to you guys, the listeners, and he loves ESPN 97.5. And because of that, he makes sure that you guys get a chance to talk to him and see if the NeoGraft procedure is right for you. I did it about 3 months ago. John Granato did it a long time after that, has already reaped all the benefits and rewards of getting all of his hair back. Fred Fowler has done it and done the same. You can be the next in line because they take care of all of you listeners, but more so than anything else, they get your hair back, your hairline back, or that baboon's butt on the back of your head that you always wear a hat or a bandana for because it's embarrassing. He can take care of it with your own hair, not sprays and foams and creams and medications. Nope, it's your own hair in a very painless, quick process that I went through, and I'm telling you right now, the difference is unbelievable because you see it immediately. You don't reap the full benefits for 6 to 9 months, but the percentage of success for the follicles replanted, 95%. That's what you want to hear. Not 50-50, not, well, there's a good chance some of them are going to grow, some of them are going to stick. Nope. You do this, and in gardening terms, it's like taking an area where you have a ton of grass and transporting the sod to where you don't have any and getting a fuller, more lush lawn across the board. That's what he's doing every time he's doing it. And for you guys, he's going to do it at a discounted price. That means that the consultation that normally costs $150 is free. Just go to 975hair.com and follow the procedure to set up that appointment. He and his staff are going to meet with you, answer all of your questions, and see if it's right for you. He also guaranteed me through the month of January he's not going to up any of the prices because he wants to take care of the listeners. Check him out. You don't have to do a thing, and it doesn't cost you anything to find out about it. But if you've been looking at your hair in the mirror and saying, God, I wish I had my hair back, now's your chance to try. 975hair.com. Go see my good friend, Doc Linville.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow,
Live from Drift Bar, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasted live, Drift Bar in the Heights. Swing on by, say hello, 1207 West 20th. A lot of drink specials. They have food trucks outside, tons of TVs everywhere. Great spot. So Josh McCown, on a day when he is getting his second interview, he's in the city of Houston, second interview this year, let me be clear, third interview overall with the Houston Texans. So I was doing some reading this morning.
Another rabbit hole.
It's time for a Jeremy Branham deep dive.
All right, so you can take this a couple of ways. Aaron Wilson, who has a new job working for a football publication, very good at what he does, he had a long story today about Josh McCown. And it's interesting, Steve Smith Jr. was the main guy that he talked to here, but there's a couple of players around the league and people that have been in the league that really liked the idea of Josh McCown as the head coach of the Houston Texans. Mike Tannenbaum was on the airwaves of ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. He said he loves the idea of Josh McCown as a head coach, likes the idea of the outside the box. Here's what Steve Smith Jr. said to Aaron Wilson on this piece. I like Josh. He's been on so many teams that he knows half of the offenses in the league because he's been around a lot of teams as the backup. He's assisted in developing the quarterbacks to see it a certain way. I think he's helped coaches with game plans. It's an advantage for a coach to have been a backup quarterback, let's be honest. Backup quarterbacks have a unique advantage in studying the game and knowing so much. Frank Reich, Doug Peterson, Jason Garrett, not a great example there. They were all backup quarterbacks. They've seen the inside of the game. It doesn't surprise me at all that Josh is considered for a head coaching job. Like, it seems more people that are inside the league, that know the industry, that know Josh McCown, they're more okay with the idea of a dude getting the head coaching job despite having 0 years of coaching experience in the NFL versus the talking heads who talk about the National Football
League. I'm not going to go that far because a lot of the people we talked to, some of them had the exact opposite response and said it was more of a joke than it was a realistic choice simply because they didn't play with him or work with him or coach with him, I would assume, because – you know, Steve Smith Jr. is he's not afraid to voice his opinion. We know that for one. And he's on the NFL Network now. But you got to respect what he has to say because he was in a locker room for a long time. Obviously, that Tannenbaum worked with McCown. So he knows. But there's also been plenty of other guys that, you know, that go, whether they be media types like us on a national basis or NFL types that are going, you know, I just don't get it. I don't see it. The timing doesn't make sense or the fact that he's at this stage in his career. Not that he might someday be that guy. And then you start, again, it has to be the right puzzle piece fitting into this overall big puzzle that you got going on in Houston. And that's just one part of it. If it wasn't all the other things with all the other pieces that didn't fit previously or fit short term and then didn't find a way to kind of come together, it would be a lot easier to at least be open to the idea of this guy, like we talked about, if surrounded by a lot of support staff, coaching and otherwise, that have all that experience he doesn't have.
Which it would be.
You assume, but you don't know. And you obviously, offensive coordinator looks like Pep now is going to be on the way out, which would mean you'd have to find someone else.
Which you said to mean average based on his history in Indianapolis.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about experience alone that can help him get through this first year or two while the team's trying to get through all that they're going through. You want guys, Lovey's going to have to help him from, you know, just a CEO perspective. And then you need other guys just as it relates to the offense and the defense and all that he's learned. It's like saying, you know what, Tony Romo changed the broadcasting industry the minute he came in because from a quarterback's perspective and not a broadcaster's perspective. Right, that's what I'm saying. I'm making the same comparison. That's what you're hoping as the best case scenario for McCown as well.
The range that you mentioned I think is a very accurate range. Like you, if the very tippity top of the range is Sean McVay and the very bottom of it's David Culley, right? Is that you would have, like that's the range that you have because it is unknown. But I'm willing to take the David Culley risk for the Sean McVay reward as opposed to just this middling franchise that goes 9-8 every
year. Okay, but here's a couple things on that, too, because and I'm not trying to crap on Culley more than anybody already has, but name me another franchise that made a hire that was that far out of the box.
Never.
That had success with it.
It's cutting edge.
Even when you look at that and say, even though I say the ceiling and you agree with me, the ceiling is McVay. But are you ever going to get the chance to be the McVay either? Because you know in the short term, no matter if you're the best coach in the world or a guy that's just getting his feet wet, you don't have a roster that's conducive to winning.
The timing of it's strange. That's why we thought year two.
Yeah, and you look at what, even from a Brian Flores, no matter how much we can disagree on it, the fact is going in, you were set up for a rebuild, so your record was never going to look advantageous the next job you took, unless you were there for a long period of time and you got to reap the benefits. That's another concern of mine, too. While he's getting his feet wet, this team's going to suck. By the time this team gets good...
Which could be a good thing, though.
If Casario's not here, if the same guys aren't here, if they aren't sitting there all on the same page anymore and the losing continues... Will you ever get a chance to see if he could develop into a full Sean McVay? Because they're going to be like, yeah, you know what? After 2-3 years in, it's just not working.
Well, if you fire Josh McCown, you're firing Nick Casario. Like they're now connected at the hip. Nick Casario should not get a third head coach as the general manager. And if you're firing Josh McCown, you should also fire Nick Casario. And if you're firing Nick Casario, you should fire Josh McCown because you'd want the new GM to.
You'd love to fire Jack Easterby, but it seems like no matter what, he's Teflon Don. He ain't going anywhere.
He's part of the family now. More on this Aaron Wilson piece on Josh McCown, who now covers the NFL for Pro Football Network. Those who know him best, speaking about Josh McCown, McCown's rare mind for the game and ability to relate to players and coaches is why he's capable of making this work. One other one from Gary Barnage, former tight end in the NFL. I definitely think all the years of Josh being a starter, a spot starter, and a backup has definitely helped mold the way he sees the game. I think he knows it just as well or even better than a lot of the coaches coaching now. He just has a knack for visualizing the game while it's happening and what other teams are thinking. I think Josh would be an outstanding coach because he knows how to deal with every situation he has been put in many throughout his career and succeeded so many times.
So then make him a quarterback's coach or, like you said, executive assistant coach or, you know, whatever you call it.
Associate head coach. Yeah.
Do some of those things to see if he can actually make that kind of knowledge translate to an NFL locker room and to play calling situations and the success of a team. Because the other thing you don't want, whether it's from his own morale standpoint of losing and losing and losing, or it is get someone while he gets his feet wet from a coaching perspective without being the head coach to understand if he can do it or not and also see how he can make things better. And then keep bridging the gap.
But you can't do that if you're Casario. Like we both agree that this is the final shot that Casario has to have success in the NFL, and that if you fire the second hire that you're bringing in as a head coach, David Culley being one, whoever is number two, whether it's Josh McCown or one of these other guys, like he can't afford another fire.
But that's why. But I think that, again, as much as he's supposed to be a communicator, you got to work with guys. You got to be talking to Cal or whoever matters making decisions as well, going, look, I know I swung and missed on Culley. I really believe this was our guy all along. If I rush him through and we put him as a head coach, the blemishes are going to pile up in a hurry, and it may taint him like a David Carr coming into the league and getting the crap beaten out of him and never being the same. I don't want to run the risk of that because I think too highly of him, and I believe in him too much. So if you're patient with me and understanding, I'm going to get another guy. He's going to be more so on the CEO type, experience type, but he's also going to be a guy that along the way,
it's a tough sell.
It is, but at the same time, you're totally all in and way too deep now to change your mind if you're Cal with all the guys you hired and you're standing behind, that you got to believe in him. He's got a 6-year deal. You got to believe that he has a vision that you have to try and buy into. That's why if you go to an O'Connell on the same front.
But is he going to want to work with that knowing what you know about McCown?
You know what? You go in with the premise of saying, hey, this is your gig. Along the way, we want to see how far McCown can go. He might, because, look, the same way McVay could have turned his back on LaFleur and all the guys you mentioned and Shanahan and all these guys and Taylor, he said, no, you know what? For the short term, it makes me look good. It makes all of us flourish. If in the meantime, if we're flourishing, if we're doing the right things
but
the right way.
But none of those guys became the head coach.
But if I'm O'Connell, I get the job and I say, you know what, I can't worry about anybody else. If I do what I'm hired to do and I believe in my own abilities, then what could happen with McVay's staff is the same way. Other teams may snap them up, but that's good because that means I'm doing my job. If I'm not doing my job, they're going to find someone else anyway. If I was at least helpful in trying to get their guy some experience, maybe that bodes well for everybody.
This to me is Casario knowing that he has one more hire left and that if he's going down with the ship, it's going to be with Josh McCown as the head coach.
But aren't you worried about him not giving the opportunity? He's not going to ever be able to show you that he could be McVay because the roster's going
to
suck.
To me, there's some positives in that. I understand the negatives that you brought up, but the positives of that is he gets to learn on the fly for a team that isn't taking their playoff chances. Like if the Texans are a 5-win or 6-win team, team next season, who cares if he makes some mistakes along the way and learns the lessons of being an NFL head coach, because you're not expected to be a playoff team anyways, and you want to embrace the suck anyways.
And if you win 5 or 6, that hurts you more than it helps you, because in the rebuild you need the higher draft picks.
Right, but you're not gonna get fired after 1 year, so why not learn on the fly?
You thought that with Cully too.
Well, if McCown gets fired after year two, so is Nick Caserio. I mean, that's just the flat out truth. Aaron Wilson, I thought the fact that he was writing a glowing piece about McCown today, like whenever I read this morning, I was like, that's kind of interesting that Aaron Wilson, who's well connected to the Houston Texans, is writing a very good piece about Josh McCown today. And then, 10 hours later, Josh McCown has another interview with the Houston Texans. 713.
We talked about their ability to manipulate the media,
yes,
too.
That to me was a tea leaf thing when I saw it, and it's even more of a tea leaf thing now. 713-780-3776. When we come back, your favorite game, my favorite game, everybody's favorite game. Who said it? We'll listen to some quotes from ESPN 97.5 personalities. Who said it's next? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.